Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. News organizations are working hard to develop a closer relationship with news consumers. The digital world is making that a lot easier. National Public Radio's main source for a direct link between audience and organization is its Ombudsman Public Editor. That hat has been worn by veteran journalist Elizabeth Jensen since January of 2015. She's worked for top-tier news organizations for three decades. It is her job at NPR to address audience issues and concerns, giving voice to and providing transparency for NPR listeners and online visitors. She's in town for the Public Radio News Directors Incorporated conference being held here at the Chase Hotel. Elizabeth, thank you for being with us.
And thank you for having me.
Well, tell me about this conference. Is anything likely to come of it that will make your life easier, do you think?
The conference is really meant to bring together the news directors from stations across the country with NPR to talk about issues of news gathering. One of the big issues these days is collaboration between NPR and the member stations, and so I think that's a real topic here. Not so much my area, but vitally important for public radio.
But these are certainly interesting days for journalism, whether it's broadcast, print, or what have you.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. It's a difficult time for journalism. The economic model is changing very, very quickly. Digital technology has really disrupted the way at least a certain segment of the population gets their news. Obviously, in public radio, there's still many, many millions of listeners who listen over their local station. But increasingly, we see younger listeners in particular going through the website or going through the app or going through their mobile phone or getting their news by way of Facebook when somebody posts a link, Twitter. News organizations and public radio in particular are really trying to adapt to that and, you know, chasing the audience, if you will, but also figuring out how to keep them on board.
We need to keep them on board because that's the next generation of listeners or whatever we're going to be calling them, in years ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, we got a dose of this digital world last night in the House of Representatives. I know you've been busy with what's been going on here, but when they turned off the C-SPAN cameras last night in the House of Representatives, Facebook came into play and Periscope came into play. Did you have a chance to see any of that? And what's your reaction to that sort of thing?
I didn't have the chance to see much of it. I was following it a little bit on Twitter. I think it's one of the joys, if you will, of our new media ecosystem. For many, many decades, the system was controlled by a few companies, by a few people. Yeah. Today, it's almost a free-for-all, but that can be challenging for, say, an organization like NPR. It can also be incredibly liberating for the viewers and the listeners and the news consumers and people who are trying to get their message out. So
there are some weaknesses, however, don't you think, in terms of who's sending out what and, what we're receiving? Is it on the up and up and has it been vetted and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I get, occasionally I'll get emails to the ombudsman's office that say, X organization reported that there were X thousand people at, a rally or something. And I have to go back and say, right, but this is a partisan organization that is making this, a news organization that's making this report. And NPR has to rely on its own journalists and what they saw and what they vetted.
There's a temptation, I know, from time to time for journalists to take information that they've received that way and retransmit it, and that is a big issue.
Of course. I like to think that NPR journalists don't do that. but certainly Twitter has, in particular, has sped up the temptation to just get on things really quickly. It was interesting. I saw that I was writing last week about Orlando and how NPR covered Orlando. And one of the phenomenon I noticed is that even just in the very, very early hours of our coverage, we were getting emails. My office was getting emails saying, you didn't call it terrorism or you didn't call it a hate attack or, people want things to be very clear very quickly, and sometimes news organizations just have to say, no, we're going to take a step back, we're going to report what we know, we're not going to report what we don't know, and But the pressure is very real there to be quicker and in making these kinds of proclamations.
There is a potential for the tail wagging the dog. If the audience is insisting and prodding time and time again, it creates a tremendous amount of pressure, obviously.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So, I think as a news organization, sometimes you just have to say, you have to be very clear, this is our mission, this is what we do and what we don't do, and stick to that, even if there is pressure. But I certainly understand the pressure. Yeah. So.
Before we get too much farther along in this discussion, maybe it would be a good idea to explain for our audience exactly what the ombudsman does. I understand you prefer the term public editor rather than ombudsman, but you can address that too if you like.
Sure. I think you summed it up pretty well at the beginning. I am the essentially I'm the liaison between the public and the newsroom. That goes two ways. So I gather listener reaction, reader reaction when it comes to the website. I gather reaction from the audience, and I make sure that feedback has a voice in the newsroom. At the same time, I try and translate what is happening in the newsroom out to the public. It's not always clear to the public why decisions are made in the way they are. And so part of my role, I think, is just explanatory, if you will. Listeners may or may not agree with why things happen, but at least I like to think that they understand them. One of the reasons I prefer public editors, I think with ombudsman, there are some listeners who take it for its alternative meaning, which is that resolution of a dispute. Mm-hmm. And it's just not always possible for listeners have very different feelings about how news coverage should take place. One listener may want us to be tougher on someone. One listener may say we're being too tough on someone else. So I can't resolve all those issues. In other words, both listeners cannot be right. So I think occasionally ombudsman carries for some people the an expectation that I will resolve their crisis or their issue in a way that I can't. So public editor just explains a little better that, I bring the public into the newsroom.
When you go into the newsroom, when you bring an issue into the newsroom, what do you do with it? You go to the news director? Do you go to individual reporters or editors or producers or whomever?
A little bit of all. It depends on the issue. I have a good relationship with Mike Oreskes, who's our head of news. So we talk quite regularly, and I say, look, this is what I'm hearing from listeners. I have no authority in the newsroom, so ultimately, if a change is going to be made in the newsroom, it's because of my powers of persuasion or powers of persuasion on the part of the listeners. Sometimes just the management hasn't thought of it in a certain way, or they don't realize how their decisions are being perceived. Sometimes they completely reject my thoughts and those of the listeners.
But it's not a situation where the personnel in the newsroom are jumping under their desks when they see you come through the door.
Occasionally, sure. When I first started, I have someone I knew earlier who works at NPR. I've known him for a long time. And he said, I had emailed him to say, hello, I'm coming to NPR. And he said, no one ever wants to get an email from the ombudsman. Yeah. So, people have been, for the most part, very, very gracious. There are different ways to do this job. Some ombuds people are more confrontational. My approach, I think, is to be a little bit more collaborative. I don't want anyone to jump under their desk when they see me coming. I obviously occasionally have to say difficult things or criticize someone or surface a problem. I mean, mistakes happen. I try to be pretty straightforward and not wagging my finger at people, if you will, because I think ultimately we all have the same goal, which is we really want the journalism to be great. And NPR's journalism is already great. There are lapses, and occasionally we work on them together.
What are the kinds of difficult things that you might have to say? We don't have to mention any names, obviously.
Good.
But
right,
but the kinds of things that are difficult.
Sometimes people just make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people run out of time. They don't check something. Sometimes I had someone the other day during the Orlando coverage who she just misspoke. She just got a fact wrong, and she was pulling out a fact, and, you know, listeners were upset. I understand why they were upset. I honestly think that she just made a mistake. But, you know, no one likes to be called out on their mistakes.
But listeners and people outside of the business can't fully appreciate the kind of pressure that we've mentioned a couple of times.
Right.
In a situation like that, it's very fluid. Things are happening all over the place, and you've got to, at times, I guess, shoot from the hip.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We had one of our anchors, our hosts, who was on air during the first hours of Orlando, Mary Louise Kelly, was preparing to leave for a reporting trip in Russia. I don't know if it was later that evening or if she was going the next morning, but, you know, for any normal person sort of getting ready to do an extended trip to Russia would be a lot of preparation.
Sure.
And she ended up coming in and just being on the air for several hours live. You know, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary and difficult, and she did a great job.
When you hear from listeners or readers, I have to put that in
right
now,
right.
Are you finding that you're receiving more response from website material, or is it still over the air?
I think it's still over the air. More people hear us over the air by far than access the website at this point. But also the radio stories are a little bit shorter, and so it's not always possible to get every aspect of every story in. NPR listeners have an expectation that NPR's journalism will be in-depth and will cover many, many facets of a story. And so I get some feedback when they feel like the aspect or the perspective that they wanted to hear wasn't in the story. Mm-hmm. In a web version, a web build-out of a story, it's easier to sort of really, really go into depth and get into everything. So,
how about the influence of podcasts now? I mean, this seems to be where the industry is going to a very large degree.
It's interesting. We were talking about that yesterday. Podcast, so there are different kinds of podcasts. Some podcasts are simply rebroadcasts of a radio program. I think when people talk about podcasts, there's maybe it has now become shorthand for a different kind of storytelling, a little bit more personal, a little bit more narrative, a little bit less traditional. Mm-hmm. There is a segment of the audience that really likes and appreciates that kind of storytelling. I think there's room for both.
Do you agree that that's where it's all going ultimately?
It's hard to tell. I mean, one of the funny things about the digital disruption is that the predictions change every year.
Yeah.
So something that could have seemed obvious a year ago is not obvious anymore, in terms of the business model as well as just in terms of listening habits. We don't know what technology is going to be coming down the road, even 2 or 3 years from now. I read an interesting report the other day that said radio is going to change fundamentally when voice technology comes into the car. So you'll get into your car and you'll say, car radio, I want to hear all the stories about what happened in the house last night. But you can pick and choose. So then what does that mean for the traditional news magazines such as Morning Edition and All Things Considered? I don't know. I mean, I try not to make predictions.
All of this while the car is driving itself, by the way.
There you go.
Because that's another direction we seem
exactly
to be heading in.
Exactly.
Our guest in studio is Elizabeth Jensen. She's the NPR ombudsman and public editor. We're going to go back and continue the conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or we'll take a tweet at STL on air. Back with Elizabeth Jensen momentarily. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Elizabeth, we can't get too farther along in this conversation without talking about the political campaign.
Oh dear
is right. And talk about challenges. I mean, this has got to be right up there. This is such a a free-for-all on so many different levels. What kind of challenges is that presenting to the news folks?
Right.
And you?
Right, absolutely. The political coverage is by far the topic that I hear from listeners about the most. I think we have one more traditional candidate this time around, and we have one candidate who is very untraditional. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the presidential campaign now.
No need to identify which one you're
talking about. There you go. So I think it's most definitely been a challenge for the newsroom to figure out how to balance that coverage. One of the challenges is that if you have a candidate who makes outrageous statements, it's possible to sort of hijack the conversation, if you will, or to certainly dominate the conversation. And so I think issues of balance, I think, are a challenge for the newsroom. So how do you cover some of the statements that are being made without sort of neglecting the other candidates? That's definitely one. One of the biggest challenges that I'm hearing from right now, and I know the newsroom is really trying to come up with a policy on how to deal with, is when you have someone who speaks and who says something that is inaccurate in the middle of an interview or in the middle of a speech. So fact-checking is just going to become a very, very big focus of the coverage this season, or it should be. I think it already has to a certain extent, but it's hard to do that on the fly if you're interviewing somebody, and we've already had many instances of that at NPR in the past couple months. Somebody says something that's inaccurate in the middle of an interview. The host has to sort of remember, pull all those facts out of their head, figure out a way to sort of challenge what was said without interrupting the conversation. Sometimes a guest will throw in an accuracy in at the very end of an interview. That happened not that long ago, and there's no time, literally no time to correct the person on air or to challenge them or to push back. So all of these are huge challenges for the newsroom.
Sure. Do you scratch your head, as some of us do, when you watch cable news and see how they don't seem to worry too much about giving time to one candidate or the other, as long as it's good for the ratings?
I have been a news junkie all my career. I have watched much less cable news this time around, partly because I really want to focus on how NPR is doing it, and I want to keep a close ear on NPR. Yes, I think it's problematic to give a candidate free rein over the telephone and let him talk. Absolutely. I think, you know, the role of journalism is to push back and to bring sort of some insight. And that said, candidates, we need to hear from candidates in their own words. We are electing a candidate. It's important to hear what the candidate is saying from either side. But right. But in balance.
It's a very delicate line to walk.
Right.
What is news? What is not news? And you've got to cover news.
Right.
You've got to cover news.
Right.
On this particular subject, we have a caller that wants to weigh in. Let's bring him in. Brant is calling from St. Louis. Brant, you're on the air with Elizabeth Jensen. Go ahead.
Thank you, Don. Okay, during the last election cycle in 2012, Diane Rehm, on her Friday News Roundup program, gave a half hour to the Republicans and an hour to the Democrats. Okay, secondly, I have contacted the station management for KWMU, and I asked, why is there so much being said about Trump? And I'm voting for a third party, so it doesn't matter to me. But why is there such little being said about the emails in Benghazi?
Thank you, Brant, for the call. You're not familiar, obviously, with what's going on here. I would dispute what he's saying. There's been plenty of comment on these things.
But,
you know, as I'm sure you've learned over the years, that people tend to hear what they want to hear. And I think
Absolutely. Perhaps
Brant falls into this category.
Right. Absolutely. I get a fair number of emails from listeners who think that NPR is biased one way or the other. I hear from all of the political spectrum. What's easier for me to talk about and what I like to ask people is for specific stories. Because often when they say, oh, I heard this story, and it really only had one perspective, I'm able to say, yes, agreed. But then we also, a week later, we had this story that had the alternative perspective. No listener can hear everything. The amount of journalism that NPR does and the local station is extraordinary. It's just not possible to listen at all times. So I think NPR is pretty balanced, but you know, I think sometimes you can miss things.
Well, speaking of Diane Rehm, and we should point out, do you have any influence over the Diane Rehm show? Because it's not NPR.
Very good.
It's WAMU.
Right. It's produced by WAMU. It is distributed by NPR. So people, listeners rightly identify it as an NPR program. As you say, we don't have any day-to-day influence over it. I have written occasionally when issues have come up with the show. I have occasionally written about it, but the day in, day out is not really, it's not something that I feel that is my purview to weigh
sure.
in on.
Sure. She's taken a little flack recently with her Death with Dignity campaign and Bernie Sanders incident that I recall.
Exactly.
While we're on that particular subject, there have been other, quote, stars that appear on NPR, such as Cokie Roberts and Nina Totenberg, who have been criticized from one reason or another. Do you get in on that sort of thing? And if so, how difficult is it to deal with the, quote, stars?
You know, Cokie and Nina in particular and some of the other stars at NPR are beloved by the audience. I had an interesting question about Cokie Roberts' role recently because she has been with NPR for so long and her role has evolved. So she started out as a reporter and she isn't. For many years now, she has been a commentator. But there are many listeners who have heard her for years who still think of her in the role as reporter. Lately, she's been making some comments. She has a column that she writes with her husband. Steve Roberts, exactly. And she's written a couple columns that have been very tough on one of the candidates. And listeners have complained to me. And so, you know, I actually wrote a column about this, sort of explaining that Cokie's role is as a commentator. And we pay her now to give her opinion. Mm-hmm. But I understand why listeners sort of can't quite follow the whole evolution of her career. You know, Nina is an incredible journalist. I don't know if you saw her today. She was doing Facebook Live outside the Supreme Court commenting on the decisions this morning. She's terrific. She's also very close to a couple of the justices that she covers and has been friends with them for years. And I had recently a listener ask me about that. I don't think it has compromised her coverage one bit, but I understand why there's a perception that reporters shouldn't be close to the people they cover, and so I dealt with that.
I think of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which gets a lot of flack for
exactly.
that very reason. What are the reporters and correspondents
exactly.
doing elbow to elbow and shoulder to shoulder with the people that they're covering every
exactly.
day?
Exactly, exactly.
Right. Let's take another call here. I think there is Gabriel calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Gabriel. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Overall, I just want to say it's fantastic to have NPR in the United States where so many other things are mitigated totally by market forces and stuff. And I know you have your own issues with gathering money and whatever. So overall, it's great. I just had a couple quick comments. First one being, I'm really happy to have seen the development of the local and in-depth coverage at our own station, KWMU, over the years. And really great. A couple quick things. The host of the Talk of the Nation, the host of the Takeaway, I hate to say this specifically, but sometimes I feel like he's interviewing himself. And I know it's a hard job, but I just feel like the guest is almost secondary sometimes. And that was one point. And then occasionally during disaster coverage, and I know it's not intentional probably, but after the source talks to someone or the journalist that's far afield, they say, great talking with you. And that's a small point. But it just sort of blows my mind. And then I just wanted to suggest that you guys forget about what we want sometimes and just do your great in-depth reporting. Forget about market forces, even if you have to take a punch occasionally. Your job is to take our money, to support you, to do your in-depth work, and stay away from the happy talk that seems to be creeping in. And that's about all I wanted to say other than that I still miss Talk of the Nation because I think that's your strong suit, really doing a large in-depth look. And sorry, I rattled that
a little bit, but thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Is Takeaway produced by NPR?
It is not. It is it's produced by WNYC, and it's distributed by Public Radio International.
That's a difficult distinction for people to make. They hear it on the NPR station, and they
absolutely. But their local stations are independent from NPR. We share branding, so a station might refer to itself as an NPR station, but in fact they buy programming from a number of distributors.
Yeah. I have a tweet here from Hillary. NPR journalists sometimes use "some say" to get an editorial opinion into a story. Why is that okay?
I don't think it's okay. I would hope that they don't do it as often as the listener says. I admit I will have heard. I have heard it on the air. It's sometimes a shorthand. It can be lazy. I hope that NPR journalists would not use it at all.
There seems to be some attention being paid to Facebook's relationship with various organizations these days, and the fact that they can provide a significant amount of revenue to stations. NPR, I believe, falls into that category. Does this create any issues?
Yes. So NPR is taking part in this experiment that Facebook is conducting called Facebook Live. The Wall Street Journal just printed the numbers, I think yesterday, the day before. NPR is getting $1.2 million from Facebook to try out the Facebook Live videos. It's good and bad. As long as it doesn't distract from the bread and butter of NPR News, which is doing our radio news and the online digital content. I think in some ways it can be good. It really sort of gives you a look at the faces and the people behind these voices that you've mm-hmm. heard. It can demystify it a little bit. It's very, very quick. Not NPR can't always go on the air immediately. So this morning it was great because Nina Totenberg was, there were some big decisions coming down to the Supreme Court, and NPR was not on the air live at that point. So she was doing it on Facebook Live, and it was terrific.
Facebook was right there last night on the House of Representatives floor.
Exactly.
It is a changing world. We only have a few seconds left. What's your biggest challenge going forward?
Oh, I think definitely just the politics. it's going to be politics for the next 6 months. We're starting on Monday. We're going to start tracking all of the coverage for listeners, so they can tune into the listener, the Ombudsman blog, and we'll be sort of keeping track and best practices and what exactly the coverage looks like.
It's going to be tough keeping up with the way things are shaping up.
Indeed.
Elizabeth Jensen, thank you so much for being with us. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks.
Enjoy your stay in St. Louis. I hope it cools off a little bit for you.
Yes, thank you.
Before you leave.
Thank you for the heat. It's been my pleasure to be here.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.